Hello, everybody, and welcome back to an all-new episode of Artsy, a Fartsy, Immigrants! Let's just take a second here. Let's just take a moment here. You saw the title of the podcast today, and it's a title that has a lot of importance to me. It has a lot of importance to what's going on in my life right now, those precious two words. You know, those who have been fans or followers or just friends and family for a long time will know that, you know, I spent most of my life trying just about as damn hard as I could to make some movement in my career as a musician. Since about the age of 15 or 16, it was pretty much just like a blind faith that that's what needed to happen. That this is what, you know, that's what needed to be the only way forward. And, you know, and it kind of... You know, it wavered a little bit here and there in college because I was also in film school. Also had this like deep passion for filmmaking, for acting, particularly, you know, being on camera. Again, a funny thing too, because I don't really have like that actor's face. You know, like I'm more of like a Michael Gambon, John Rhys Davies type, you know. There's a good opportunity there to be a very memorable character in something, but there's not like leading man material. And you know what? That's okay. It's good to know your place. It's good to know where you are. That's kind of off topic, but the point is, I just recently rewatched probably one of my all time favorite movies, which is Sleepy Hollow, and there's something about 90s Johnny Depp that is just so jaw-droppingly beautiful. And you think, oh, well, of course, you know, they wanted to do this that way and whatever because they're paying for that phrase, you know? I watched a behind-the-scenes thing recently about The Fugitive, and the production of Warner Brothers or whoever it was very upset about Harrison Ford having a beard. And they wanted to make sure that the script led to a path where he cuts that off because they were like, you know what? We're paying for that face. And the same thing happened in Sleepy Hollow where Depp actually wanted to look a lot more his character Ichabod Crane in the famous folklore and the old stories. Was a very ugly man, big nose, big goofy ears, and Depp wanted to wear prosthetics to look a lot more like the real guy in the story. Or not the real guy, but you know, the one portrayed in the books. And again, whoever it was, I don't know if it was Miramax or Paramount or Warner Brothers, was like, no, thank you. If we're going to pay for Johnny Depp, we want people to know that it's Johnny Depp. And good call indeed, because my God, is he easy on the eyes. So yeah, you know, that veered off course, but basically I'm just saying music was like the main thing. And of course in college I had these, you know, passions coming up, doing improv and stuff like that. And it's all threading back to this thing about the title, right? So you have this core meaning, those precious two words. The two words I'm talking about are sold out. Not to be confused with sell out. That's a very different thing. Don't think I'm quite there yet. Although money does talk, so let's see what happens. But sold out is a phrase, these two words, these precious two words. It's a phrase I've hunted and worked towards, I mean, for most of my life, you know. I remember seeing, you know, we would sell out this little local small town record store venue in my hometown, Top Shelf. We would sell that out for sure. But I mean, you know, if you had two or three local acts that had enough friends who wanted to come see them, and you'd put on a show, you'd put on one or two shows a month, you know, and just make like a routine, fun Saturday night event. The whole place, you know, was full at 50 people, 60, if you're really cramming people in. So it wasn't, you know, horribly impossible, but it's not like we'd really put, you know, sold out and this big white sign on the door, like nobody can come in, this is it. You'd probably still try and, you know, I think that's just where the tickets stopped selling, even though it was already full. But if more people had come, probably that we would have just found a way to do it. But I had a taste of it. I had a taste of this feeling of sold out back in high school at this local venue. I had that feeling. I had that taste of like people wanting what you're offering, this entertainment value. And never again was I a part of an activity or a live event that held that same sort of capacity. But I fought for it. I mean, I really wanted it. I wanted it, and I just didn't get it. I mean, I had I'm getting to something positive here, but I'm just basically trying to set the picture here. You know, I had all these bands in college. I had a lot of projects at one time. I had my solo project. So I had my folk acoustic singer songwriter, just me, with an acoustic guitar thing. And then I had Jordan Prince Band. So that was like four or five of us, definitely inspired by the Shins, Wilco, maybe Born Ruffians a little bit, a little more like sort of clean folky rock. And then you had Big Le Moi, and Big Le Moi was a very experimental, very challenging band for me to be in. I learned a lot. It was with some of my best friends of all time. Really loved being a part of that. A lot of democratic decisions being made, and a lot of innovation in terms of how I viewed how things should work. It was really cool and sometimes difficult, but in the end, that was kind of like important that it was difficult. You know, like in hindsight, you can say, oh, it was good that we fought about that because it came out like this. And that was, you know, this Radiohead-inspired project that I had all at the same time. And then I had Galley Knappers. And Galley Knappers was this punk, garage, trash, distorted, thrashy rock, heavily inspired by Jack White and Wolf Mother and a few other, I'm trying to think of like a few other projects at the time that I was really, 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 really into. Maybe even a little Green Day. I don't know. But Green Day for me was something I stopped listening to a long time ago, but definitely influenced me a lot in my early years. And it was just this like trashy, heavy, you know, guitar driven punk, garage, rock. So all of these projects, and, you know, I think Galley Knappers basically got started right around the time that this other band I had, Titanium Caterpillars, Tight Cats, which I prefer the name of Tight Cats, was ending. So, you know, one kind of traded for the other, but at one point maybe it was like five different projects, right? Four or five projects. And with all of these bands, there was different moments of potential, moments of hype, moments of gain, moments of loss, others getting more gain than others. Like, you know, Galley Knappers would get these cool opportunities, but was never really taking off. I think we would have needed much more hard work and much more determinism to really get that to a place where it felt that we could take off or get lucky. You know, a lot of these things are luck. And then you have like Big Le Moi was a lot of talent, a lot of people, like all of them way more talented than me. It was great to be a part of that because I could learn so much. Wonderful music, interesting live shows. But again, you know, you're just playing these venues that just never, you know, it's like, hey, look, we're going to play, you know, this venue, Gasa Gasa, on a Friday night. And you know, not even half the, you know, it's like 50, you know, 30, 40 people would come. You know, it's just like, that was the usual thing. New Orleans also, I have to remember, New Orleans is also like so musically full. It's like a completely packed out sub sandwich musically, you know, like it's got every topping, it's got every flavor, it's got every sauce. It's packed, you know, you just don't need more, but there's always more. So it was always like someone always had something better to do. There was always some huge act, you know, around the time that we were trying to sell out a local venue, you would have people like Tame Impala and Father John Misty coming through town and selling out the Sanger Theater, or the Civic Center or whatever. Jenny Lewis would come out and you just, there's just no chance. I mean, if just, you know, of course, you know, all your friends, people, you know, local people, they want to go see these you know, big touring acts, and that's normal. And I didn't have jealousy with them or something, but I'm just trying to paint the picture. Like, you know, you have all these acts, you have all these bands, music is your main thing. You're working a bit in, you know, writing some original music for some projects, some short films, some things like that. But, you know, in general, your passion is still that this is the way, right? Then, you know, then I moved to Germany. And in those first couple of years in Germany, I have a huge amount of traction. I have this novelty of being a foreigner. I do think that there is that skill of you know, of decent songwriting. I think my voice got better as I got older, but, you know, there was probably something that some people liked in those first few years. I'm always going to be overcritical of myself. I mean, I have this record from a long time ago. I mean, 10 years now, probably, The Deer Jump. And that album is, you know, for me, unbearable, just unbearable to listen to. And I have friends who really still love it. And maybe it'd be kind of cool to do like a 10-year anniversary, like, you know, remix, like not remix, but like for me to re-record some of these songs in my older voice and maybe see how they would come out with 10 years difference between them. But, you know, listening back to that old stuff, it's just impossible for me. I can't listen to it. So I feel very lucky, and maybe I felt had these moments of like kind of charm and novelty and stuff in those first couple years living in Germany. I got very lucky, and I was touring a lot. You know, I had like a manager, and I was playing these major festivals, and I really thought this is when it's going to happen. You know, like 2017, Jordan in Germany, I thought, this is it. I'm playing these major festivals, Reeperbahn Festival, you know, Wattenschlick, Stimmen Festival, Pulse, like all these big festivals, and this is it. Like, I'm working on a new album, I'm doing a tour, all of this is leading towards something really big. I'm working on a huge album. I was like building this huge record called 12 Songs for 12 Friends. It was all leading towards this big release concert, this album release concert, you know, in Munich, coincidentally at this same venue that I am about to be talking about, which all comes full circle. It's really interesting. Five years later. God, 5 years ago. That's really crazy. 19, 20, 22, 5 years ago. You know, everything in my whole life, I remember it so like it was yesterday, leading up to this album release party. I made this amazing record. There's a whole story. I mean, I did like 9 episodes about that album. If you want to know the story behind that album, this podcast has it. Go back, you know, I don't know how many episodes ago, but, you know, a few months ago. And I did like 8 episodes on it. I went through like the whole album song by song and told the whole story. But it was a huge part of my life. It's my only tattoo referencing this album. And I thought for sure, like this, I did all these huge things. I had a booking agent, huge festivals. Now I'm about to do this album release party. I'm like a local name. I can sell out this venue. And even then, you know, 5 years ago, I just didn't do it. You know, it was my biggest accomplishment to that point. It felt like we sold it out. It felt like a good crowd, but it still just didn't. It just didn't get the traction that I wanted. However, in the moment, I was very proud, of course. Like, I wasn't disappointed on the night of. I felt very lucky, very happy. And I played songs like James, and my friend Vivi played with me, and people sang along in the crowd, and it was a wonderful experience. And, you know, I ended up making like really great friendships from people who attended that concert, like our friend Moritz that I always talk about. You know, I had never really met him before, and that was like the first time that he saw me on stage, and it was really a special thing. And, you know, he and I have talked about that a lot, but it was, yeah. That would have been, for me, like, a core moment to have that feeling, to have, like, it's done, it's happened, it's sold out, this is working. And still, however, it just didn't happen that way. And it continued to just not happen that way, you know? And I have to forgive myself a little bit, because it wasn't as if I worked exactly at the same speed, at the same strength, with the same effort all the way through up until today. And then it finally happens. Everything changed. That's something that I'm also like, I need to remember. I need to put that like into my mind and keep that very clear. Like from that concert on, everything changed. Everything changed. You know, it was this album released. And then in 2019, I left the management because there was so many issues. I was working on a new EP. That EP went out the window. I had a big falling out with one of the bandmates. You know, everything kind of fell silent. 2019, I started this podcast as sort of like a balance to that whole thing. Also played Brighton, if you don't know about it. I played Brighton once at this festival. It's pretty cool. That's a deep cut for the real listeners out there. And then... yeah, 2020, of course, pandemic. So then it's like, you know, everything stopped, no tour, 2020 pandemic, no new shows. I'm working on a new album. 2021, new album comes out, but you know what? The traction from the previous festivals and the live show stopped, so it fell pretty flat. Not a lot of traction online for anything musically, anything that I'm doing. There's no tour, there's no release concert for this new album. Some radio play, but it pretty much just kind of like putters out, whatever. And, you know, it hurt. And I remember thinking that was kind of the moment where I realized, like, maybe this isn't the right thing. Like, I love this and I enjoy doing it and it's important to me, but maybe that's just not it. But I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it is supposed to be. Like, what is it? Because I'm not the kind of person that can just go and work in some business, in some office, and get some degree in something. And I hate that about myself, because it probably would have been a lot easier for me if I had just been that guy who's like, I'm going to work in hospitality and go be a manager at a hotel. Or if I could just be the type of guy who's like, I love cooking, I'm going to work in this restaurant and like become a sous chef at this thing. And oh, maybe I'll work towards having like a Michelin star or something. Like, if I could just have one thing, or a mechanic or an electrician or a technician or something, if I had just any kind of interest or passion or brain for that department of life at all, it would have been so much easier for me. But here I was, this type of guy who is a creative person, who has a pure, like, unadulterated hatred for having a boss or someone that like tells me what I can't do and needing to be like fulfilled creatively, but I still can't, like, but there's no exit for it. And then all of a sudden, in the pandemic, I start making these videos.
I mean, you know how the story goes from there. It's something I've talked about a lot. Making language videos as a hobby, you know, getting American Sunday and stuff, becoming a freelancer through that. And then just by, like, chance and luck, I believe, people picked up on my humor and enjoyed it. And, you know, now, like, it all happened in just a year. It's really, really, really crazy. And with all that being said, I feel like that went on a very long time, but with all that being said, like, getting to the point now where the career path changed, my intentions or like my goals, and things changed, to be in a position where I can like officially say, you know, it was so exciting. There was, I don't know how many like 150, I think, pre-sale tickets. So like the reason I chose the Milla Club in the first place was I wanted to choose a venue. Maybe I'd talked about it already, but I wanted to choose something that's comfortable, that I'm familiar with, and that also wasn't a huge amount of people. I knew that the Milla isn't a huge venue, and I wanted to play it because I knew in my heart that like this must be the time that it will sell out. Like this will be the time. And but I assumed it would take place over like 6 to 8 weeks. Like I thought, oh, okay, well the show's January 13th, so probably around like late December or something it'll be sold out. And that'd be such a fun announcement. And then just to, you know, to know that within just 3 hours, the first 150 pre-sale were gone. Maybe it was even faster than that, but 3 hours is when I found out the first time. Like 3 hours is when someone said something in a message and I checked and it was sold out. And then I got to contact the venue and they were like, whoa, that's great. All the pre-sale sold. Fantastic. We didn't even put up posters. You know, we didn't. I just put an Instagram story up. And then, so I thought that the pre-sale was all of the tickets. I thought 150 people is all of the tickets. And he's like, oh, no, there's 70 more that are available, like usually that you would hold for the door or wait for people to at the last minute. And I said, let's put them up. Or he was like, let's just put them on the link so people can keep buying, because I kept getting all these messages. People were like, what's going on? Why can't we buy tickets? We put it up and I kid you not, in 10 minutes, in 10 MFing minutes, the venue was really officially like totally capped out, sold out, 220 people, like boom. And now people are asking for a second date. I'm looking at dates with the venue. And that's probably going to sell out too, because there's a lot of people who still just couldn't get their ticket. And just imagine that. Imagine that. And now I'm in a place where I can do this dream that I always had about performing on a stage and touring this performance in different cities. And it's so funny to think about how I never imagined it would be with comedy, and I never imagined it would be in Germany. But somehow, through the miracle of like entropy and the laws of attraction and yes, hard work, of course, I'm not completely neglecting my own efforts. There's a lot of luck and chance and stuff, but I do have to make the content. Somehow throughout all of that, it's happened exactly this way. And it's really a beautiful thing that I am not taking for granted, that I am definitely not letting slide without acknowledgement. And if this all stops now, if finally after all these years of hard work, if finally after all these years, I sell out a rock venue in like, you know, together probably a couple of hours, like just sold out. If I can do that now and it stops, like no more people want to see anything, like the show goes bad or no one wants to see anything or it's just like over, at least I will have gotten here. And trust me, I'm worried every day that it will change or stop or fall through or alter in some way. Every day, every month that the numbers change in some way, I always think, well, that was a good run, because it feels so fragile to me. It feels so fragile. It's unbelievable. I, in this career that now has like surpassed my expectations, now being in a position can finally like, I mean, if you guys knew how many people are asking me to come to Berlin, I mean, I can't fathom it. And I know that I'm going to sell out a venue at least the same size in Berlin, and maybe even twice. And for me, that's so crazy to finally be in a place where I can do that, and it still feels so fragile. So my goal is to try and build the best performance that I can. I've never done something that isn't just music. Of course, I've talked a bit between songs, but this is different. This is stand-up and it's storytelling and it's variety. And, you know, it's my friend Josh gave me some good advice. He's a content creator himself and a great musician from New Orleans. If you don't know his channel, Have a Great Day. I took a lot of inspiration from him when I first got started making content because, I mean, he was my, you know, famous friend for a couple of years there. He was the guy who had like a crazy following. And somehow we sort of switched around where now, you know, we can kind of give each other advice on things, but we do very different content. And he gave me some good advice the other day when I told him that I'm nervous about this show because he does his own variety show, but he does more of like a very pure late night talk show. He sits behind a desk. He has like his own Andy Richter co-host guy working the computer, pulling up, you know, funny PowerPoints they made, playing live music, interviewing guests. It's very late night talk show. And I love that because that he's really good at that. And my thing, I want to be more, it's hard to say, not like theater, but I want mine to be a bit more unpredictable from the audience's perspective. I want it to tell us, I'm basically, it's like a play, you know. I want to go out, I want there to be stories that thread together like a motif and that songs can connect certain ideas. And Josh gave me some good advice that was like, you know, don't overthink it. Just tell your story. Like, just tell a story. And have make the show a beginning, a middle, and an end. And, you know, sometimes something that simple just doesn't cross your mind. Sometimes things that simple just don't come to mind the way that you would think they would. And it just snapped something where I was like, oh, yeah. I can just write. And then I thought, well, this will be great. Then I can, you know, come out. I can do an intro about this, talking about these things, where I'm from, what I used to look like as a teenager, my stories, and then, you know, I can thread in some songs from 12 Songs for 12 Friends. Oh, this is, you know, this story gets a bit serious. Here's this song about it. Then it can go into something funny again. You know, and then connecting dots to, you know, my university experience, my love for film, you know, coming to Germany, and my life changing, and you know, then of course that's just opening this door for all the humor that, you know, probably most of the people want to see, things about the German accents and the culture and the language. And also being able to incorporate songs into that from that dealt with real things like isolation or depression, and still threading it all back together. And like, there's this story to tell, and it's my story. And I'm in a position where I really need to make it perfect. But to be fair, though, that's the wrong word to use, because I need to remind myself that there is no such thing as perfect. So I shouldn't strive for that. I should just strive for the best that it can be. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. So, yeah, as of this recording, one performance at the Miller Club in Munich, January 13th, completely top to bottom, sold out. And probably going to add a second date. Going to try and negotiate the days with the club. I didn't like the ones they sent me because I prefer weekends, but I know that they have so many weekends locked out. Maybe it makes more sense to try a second date at a different venue. So we have to see. And I think we're going to go forward with the socks merch. It's just a very expensive investment for me, but it's probably the right time to just go for it. And let me think here. Yeah, I guess that's all I really wanted to talk about. Yeah, those two precious words, man, sold out. I'm grateful, and I really appreciate everybody who follows my content and shares it, and you know, who you know, I see these messages from strangers. I don't always reply to everybody, but you know, you see messages, people saying that, you know, the videos, you know, brighten their day, they struggle with this or that or something, and, you know, makes them laugh. And that means a lot to me, because I always admired the power of comedy so very much. I watched a video the other day of Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig together at the Golden Globes a few years ago, or maybe the Oscars, but I think it was the Golden Globes. And they did this bit where they were announcing the lead, you know, actor or actress for the films of that year. But the bit was that they had definitely, obviously not seen any of the movies, but had to pretend that they had. And it's so good. It's so funny. I don't know. They'll say something like, and here's so-and-so from Moonlight. And then the bit will be like, oh, that beautiful, that moonlight, you know, under that nice, the pale moon, and how bright the moon was indeed, you know, and the light that it cast upon the people who are in the movie. And the movie was good. It left a mark. And remember, and that person's like, you get out of here. And they're just so genius. And it just, like, I was having such a slow day and I saw that and I laughed to tears, like literally laughed myself to tears, and got the giggles and everything. And it was just like, oh, this is such a miracle that there's this thing in the world like comedy. And I'm happy just to, even in a very small way, to be a part of that world. And I hope this leads to being able to meet people that I admire and, you know, can work with. And yeah. So let's see. I think 2024 is going to be a good year. I think there's going to be some more live shows. I think there's going to be some big news coming with entertainment regarding like things that I'm planning and working on right now. There's some very good news all around. So stay tuned, guys. Stick with me. I love doing this podcast. It's still like my favorite thing. It's my most personal thing. It's my personal time with all of you, and it's my personal time, kind of with me and my own thoughts. Honestly, it's my slow time. It's my meditation. So, I appreciate that. And yeah, as usual, guys, you know, if you liked this, if you connected to something, or if you just want to spread the word, please, you know the routine: subscribe, like, share, comment, add a rating anywhere where you get your podcasts. It really helps people find the show. Just send it to a friend. You know, if they like my videos, you came across this, you enjoyed spending some time with me, share it to a friend who you think might also like it. I have other episodes where I interview other content creators, and it's a lot of fun. And sometimes episodes like this are just little therapy sessions for myself. So I really appreciate it. You guys are the best, and you mean a lot to me. And hopefully soon I'll be going live again on TikTok. Maybe I won't do it for the podcast, but I'll do it just for funsies. And, yeah, happy spooky season. I love Halloween. I wish I had the time to do a proper Halloween special this year. But I guess, actually, this is the last one. Let me see. Yeah, this is the last episode before Halloween, everybody. So yes, this weekend I'm out of town, and then I'm back, and then there's a little Halloween get together next week, so that's on Tuesday. Everybody, have a wonderful, safe, spooky Halloween. And sending you, like, sincerely, I love you guys, and I really appreciate you being here with me. So let's keep this family growing. Let's keep this party rolling. Have a wonderful week. Take care of yourself, and bye-bye. Look out, baby. The saints are.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.